fame, applause, the electric rush of a sold-out crowd. For most, that would be the dream. But what if behind the velvet ropes and platinum records, there's a void? Tonight, we pull back the glittering curtain and step into the shadows of the mind with Hall of Fame musician, author, and spiritual seeker Jimmy Ryan. His new book, California Dreamin' and Primal Screamin', doesn't just tell tales from the road. It's a raw, unfiltered odyssey through hypnotic regressions, paranormal encounters, primal therapy, and soul-shaking self-discovery. What happens when the search for sanity veers into the supernatural? And can healing be found in the very places others fear to tread? A journey through fame, fear, and the fringes of reality begins now. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and joining me now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Jimmy Ryan. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much for joining. Sure. And, you know, it's fascinating. We have a night of musicians and magic, if you will. I love the fact that musicians are coming forward more talking about the strange supernatural, because I've got to guess there's a lot of that that's actually going on in the background of most musicians' lives. Whether they realize it or not, it does seem that there's a calling, mm-hmm. and they become a bit of a medium or a channel for that calling, don't they?
I think they do. I think they do. I certainly did myself, although that wasn't the largest part of my journey, because my first experience into that area was it was pretty nuts.
Yeah, a little unnerving, huh?
Not even a little, a lot. I started off on the milder side, playing with pyramids, as you may have read in the book.
Right.
I got fascinated by Egyptology, so I actually built a model of the Giza pyramid. You know, it was to scale. And, you know, I tried things out, like they supposedly, if you put something, I guess, a third up underneath the apex, put a razor blade on it, it'll sharpen the razor blade. You know, it'll regrow the crystals. And if you put butter on there, a stick of butter, it'll stay fresh for, you know, 700 years or something stupid like
wow.
that. And that it actually was my experience. It did. The blade did seem to be sharper after, you know, a day or two under there. I didn't leave the butter under there for weeks, but I did leave it under for several days, and it was as fresh as at room temperature, and it was certainly fresh. So weird and wonderful, you know, odd facts. But,
you know, speaking of that, I went to Egypt a few years ago. Okay. We did a tour with some of the listeners, and we went out and visited some of the amazing sites there, including the Great Pyramids and King Tut's tomb. And when we were in the Great Pyramids, there was one area that the leader of our group said, let's just sit down and kind of soak in the moment and meditate, and I'll lead it. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, everybody sit down, cross your legs. And I'm like, ooh, I'm a rusty old man. I don't know that I can sit here with my legs crossed for too long. And especially on that hard floor. And I'll tell you what, I got down there, folded my legs. We sat there in this kind of meditative state for about 40, 45 minutes. And then when it was over, I stood up without any hassle. My back didn't hurt. My knees didn't hurt. My legs didn't hurt.
Interesting.
Yeah. So she seemed to know what she was talking about. And that really brought me into a whole new holy cow moment of realizing there are some aspects of this energy in these places around the world and why they're there.
Well, I mean, there's a big, a new discovery about the big pyramid at Giza, that there's these pipes coming down underneath it. They're like 30 stories down, and they're wrapped in some kind of wiring or hoses, and it just opens up a whole new thing that this was absolutely not a burial ground. This was something very, very different. What exactly is, you know, an open question that they're looking into now, but I love that. I'm a big fan.
If you don't mind, walk us through your first experience, the one that really kind of shook you, and give us a little of a taste of what that was like.
There was a period in my life, and I got introduced to it in a recording session. I was recording with a friend, and his producer was very much into what I call it, the occult. Spiritualism would probably be what he would call it. And, you know, he would talk about it on recording sessions. And I was kind of fascinated. At this point, I had been a TM meditator for a while. And though the TM movement kind of discourages all this stuff, they're very much practical. Just meditate and it helps your brain and a lot of science. No, you start meditating, you'd start thinking about a lot of things you wouldn't have thought about before.
Right.
So I was fascinated. And he took me to a spiritual church, not a Catholic or a Protestant or anything, just spiritual. And there were odd, no statues, but oh God, I'm trying to remember, weird candlesticks on either side. And the woman was a little witchy looking who was giving the sermon. But otherwise, it just seemed like, you know, kind of a weird religious ceremony. So I started getting fascinated. I picked up a few books, one by Dion Fortune, Psychic Self-Defense, Joan Grant's Many Lifetimes. And I started reading him. I said, man, this is cool stuff. But the more I read Dion Fortune, she was talking about stuff that I wasn't that interested in. I mean, having grown up a Catholic and being just infused with the idea of demons and Satan and all that stuff, that was something I kind of want to lean away from. But she was talking about all this lower, or I should say higher, I'm not sure what the word, but anyway, other demons and clip-offs and all these names for evil spirits. And I go, yeah, this is kind of, and the idea of you want to get rid of a problem with a certain person. You wave a psychic sword in the air and you cut this this rope between, I don't know, whatever. So the next experience is going to take a few minutes. So, and I know we're running up to the halftime or the quarter time. So I'll just say, stay tuned folks for the real apex of this.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, just knowing what we know and having spoken to experts for the last billion years here doing paranormal radio.
Sure.
It's interesting to me that somebody who's supposed to be leading you through transcendental meditation and bringing you to this level would start naming demons, because the belief is when you start to speak of them and you speak them out, that gives them power. That invites them in. As a matter of fact, with the very famous Amityville Horror case, Christopher and Daniel Lutz, the two youngest sons, believe that because of George Lutz's connection to transcendental meditation and the fact that he wasn't calling in positive energies, he was calling in darker energies to give him power, to make him feel more forceful and powerful. They believe that's what actually happened in that house, is that he became the conduit in the portal and opened that up. So it's a little frightening to think that your moderator, the person you're trusting, starts doing this and starts bringing these things up. Now, talking about the cleaving of the cables and the connections, I've had a spiritual cord cutting done, and as like you, kind of raising my eyebrows and okay, we'll see how this goes. But I'll tell you, there is something to it. You actually feel a physical disconnect when this is taking place. And that was kind of a shock as well. Jimmy Ryan, our guest, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more to discuss with our guest, more about his encounters, and we'll hear about this strange situation and how it continued to unfold. We'll do that next, right here on the Paranormal 360. All right, Jimmy Ryan, our guest this evening. It's an evening of music and mayhem, if you will. We're discussing strange supernatural encounters and the lives of two musicians that were affected and impacted by strange supernatural forces. Jimmy, you were telling us just prior to the break about your experience and going in, dealing with something that was very frightening for you. So please, if you don't mind, let's reset and take off.
Well, I will. But first, this is going to be... Okay. The Amityville Horror.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bucket of cold water that's the size of a water tower to throw on that. A very close friend of mine lived in that house, grew up in it. And he said, the whole thing is the biggest crock of BS you ever heard in your life. It never happened. The house was bought by a couple of horror movie writers. They liked the house. They liked the idea. So they came up with this whole scam of the Amityville Horror, and none of it ever happened. It was fiction. And people still, there are parades of cars that go down the street just to see that house. My friend Terry lived there. He grew up in that house. He says, it's nonsense. It's a house on Long Island. So for those of you who are into that, I'm sorry. I do have the receipts on this one. And it really was, it was just a movie. It was just a horror movie. But this thing I'm going to tell you was not. This is real. So I go over to my friend's house and I'm with my wife. And I go, whoa, you guys turned the heat off? This is like November, December, something. And he says, no, mate, I didn't. And he's a British guy. And I said, wow, it's cold in here. He says, well, no, it isn't actually. And I said, what's going on? He says, go look at the thermostat. So I look at it, it's set to 73, and it's freezing in there. What is going on? Now, I had this experience, and it was an experience. Nobody told me about this, that I would turn my head, and the room would slightly shift. It would kind of bend a little bit. And go, it's almost like when you first get progressive lenses, contact lenses, when you shift your head like that, the peripheral vision right. kind of bends. Well, that's what it was doing. And I was wearing contacts, not the progressive lenses. So anyway, I said, what's going on? He says, I can only guess. But he said, I had a friend here, a musician friend, who had been struggling with heroin addiction. And he said he came in here. And after being in here, now these people are TM meditators, long-term meditators, and the atmosphere in the house is usually pretty pure because meditation kind of purifies the space. He said he came in here, and then after a short period of time, he goes, whoa, man, I've never felt this good in ages. Damn, I'm going to go out and have a run. Well, whatever, he had something attached to him. We were talking about demons and spirits and stuff like that. Now, I didn't see anything. I'm not psychic in that way. But my friend Jim's estimation of it was that something that was attached to him thought the energy coming from the room was a lot better than the energy coming from this junkie. So it hopped off and attached itself to the room. And I felt its presence like I could feel my hand right here. And I said, wow, what are you going to do? He says, well, you know, I've been studying white magic. He says, I think I can do an exorcism. I said, have you ever done an exorcism before? He says, well, I read about them, you know. He says, a book at the library, at the whatever store in Camden Town. So anyway, my wife and I go home. We go to bed. We watch an episode of Monty Python's Flying Circus on the BBC. We go to bed. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, we both wake up and there is like a hurricane outside. You don't get hurricanes in London.
No.
And the wind is blowing and cats are howling and it is really, really weird. And we don't know what's going on. We're sitting bolt upright in our bed. It took about a half hour and then just died down. And I looked outside in the sky. I saw stars as much as you can see in London with all this smoke. Well, it was kind of scary, but we just went back to sleep. The next morning, we went over to his house, and it felt different. It felt warm. It felt fine. And his wife was sitting over in a corner, and she looked like she had literally seen a ghost. She was wrapped up in a blanket, and her face was white as a sheet, and she was just kind of staring into the distance. I said, I know there's a story here, bud. What happened?
Right.
He performed an exorcism. He actually did. He did the chalk circle. With the north, south, east, and west points with candles, summon Michael, Gabriel, Uriel, and I forget what the fourth angel is, and started chanting. And he said the craziest stuff started happening. The house looked a mess. There was broken glass all over the place. And I said, what happened here? He says, well, when I really started going with it, a bulb came out of the ceiling fixture. And I said, that's impossible. These are British fixtures. They're bayonet fixtures. You have to push them up, turn them a quarter turn to the left, and then pull them out. They don't unscrew, and right. they never fall out. They don't. Well, they did. And one smashed on the floor and broke all over the place. He said kitchen drawers were going in and out, smashing in and out, silverware going all over. I said, come on, man. You're putting me on. He says, I am not putting you on. Look around the room. And sure enough, there was silverware on the floor. There was broken glass. This went on for about a half hour, and God bless him, he studied his book well, because after a half hour, it ended. And he said it was the scariest thing he has ever done in his life, and he never touched white magic again. He that day, he said, all right, I did it. I'm done. Boom.
Right.
So that was my experience. It wasn't a direct experience, but I was certainly there for the aftermath and the beginning, and I certainly felt what was going on prior to it.
Anyway. Could you feel a shift there? Could you feel that this was gone, that broke?
Yeah. The room was warm. There was no longer the shifting when I turned my head. The room was stable. Yeah, it was completely different. It was weird as hell when I got in there in the first place, the night before, the evening before.
Right. How does that affect you then, Jimmy? I mean, somebody who's a logical thinker, right? I mean, you're creative, imaginative, being in the music world, but to have something that radically outside the realm of normal, what was that like for you?
I closed those occult books and never pulled them off the shelf again. That's how it affected me. You know, I had read Colin Wilson's The Occult. It's about an 800-page book, and it scared the crap out of me. I mean, it's not useful thinking for me. I'm, you know, it's hard enough to work in this dimension, right. You know, to start messing around with all these other dimensions that aren't necessarily friendly. Tell me what the upside of that is. Nothing that I can think of. You know, I'm not Aleister Crowley. I don't, you know, this is not.
Are you sure, Jimmy? Because I've never seen the two of you in a room together.
Yeah, well.
All right. Yeah, I figured.
You got me. You got me. I'm the reincarnation of the great magician. So
Jimmy,
yeah,
Ryan is the author of California Dreamin'. Primal Screaming is the name of the book. It is out and available. And again, remember, folks, don't just pick up the book and read it. Rate and review it, because those ratings and reviews help our authors get much more exposure with this book. I've got about a minute left in this segment before we have to take a break, though.
Sure.
I'm curious. I've spoken to a lot of musicians over the years, and it's really kind of interesting to hear their effect. Have you ever been in the midst of creating when you can feel almost like a vibrational shift around you, like there is something you have entered?
Yeah, it doesn't feel, I have to think about that. What happens is if you get something that's really good, you are grounded in the present moment. There's nothing around you except that wonderful feeling like, ooh, this is good. And in my senior years, I've come to recognize what John Lennon seemed to know all along, is that it doesn't come from us. It comes through us.
Right.
And when you get that ego out of the way and you stop saying, I did this and I and me and all that, and just open up and just let it come through you, it's a wonderful experience. And it's not something you have to defend, say, oh, my song and my creation. It's just like, I was blessed to have, you know, this come through me. And I put my name on it. Sure. Whose name is, you know.
Hold tight. We'll be right back. Jimmy Ryan, our guest right here on Paranormal 360. All right. Welcome back to the program. The book is called California Dreaming and Primal Screaming. Jimmy Ryan, our guest. And we're talking about his life and his experiences, the things that have opened up to him. When you started to write this book and actually put the thoughts and memories on paper, and remember these moments, did you feel any impact from revisiting these thoughts, like still tethered to those moments and connections? Or do you feel that you've cleanly broken from the strange things that have happened to you?
It was a catharsis of some kind, you know, just reliving the moments, especially the experiences of doing primal. It wasn't exactly primal therapy. It was an offshoot of primal therapy. But when you allow yourself to start to explore a feeling that may just be a subtle feeling like, I hate this situation, and then says, amplify that. I hate this. I hate this. And you start screaming it at the top of your lungs. My God, is that transformative? It just ventilates. It just takes it out of you. And when you're done, there's this tremendous relief. Now, what this book isn't all about paranormal stuff. Certainly that aspect is in there, but it's about contacting deeper levels of the self, of going inside and removing what isn't you. These things that we latch onto, like the impressions of being, I'm messed up, I'm stupid, I'm, you know, I have no value to society, all these insecure feelings. All these things I did, primal therapy, EST, LifeSpring, one-on-one therapy, Jungian, Freudian, John Gray stuff, you know, all these things. Each one of them contributed in a way that got me closer and closer to the real me. And one of the greatest experiences I had was with a spiritual teacher called Adyashanti. We were doing 6 40-minute meditations a day, plus lectures and stuff like that on a retreat. And for 3 days, the self went away. Now, what does that mean? It could be very scary for some people, but I was ready for it. The experience of no self is to get to the very, very, very bottom of who you are, with all the ego stuff gone, all the ideas, all the impressions, all the memories, all that stuff gone. And the only thing left is the essential you, which is the same you as everyone else. It's this blank, void, peaceful, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful feeling. And in that moment, there was no centralized me. There was just this presence that was the whole room and the whole universe. And this lasted about 3 days. And it was absolutely fantastic. Some people get very frightened when they have this experience. If you hang around deep meditation circles, people have this. For me, it was this tremendous burden lifted. It's like I had a 70-pound backpack on and somebody just cut the straps on it. It fell off. And now I'm walking out around and I'm just space. Now I could communicate just like I normally would, but the inner feeling was bliss. It wasn't fear on any level. It was like, oh man, this is who I am. I'm not a musician. I'm not a human body. I'm not a neurotic. I am this, and this is universal because it's unbounded. It's infinite. It's whatever. By definition, it's everybody. We are all that.
Right.
When they say we are all one, this is the level where that becomes an experience. Not just, we're all one, kumbaya. No, the experience of that is very different. And it's just transcendent, fabulous, whatever. I wish I had it all the time. I do get it from time to time. You know, during the day, I'll just have a moment of, oh, there it is. Oh, boy. And then somebody will say something. So that has taken me a little bit. Are we all right for time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's taken me a little bit farther away from messing with paranormal stuff, because that's all part of the relative. That's dimensions that are like our dimension, only maybe, you know, a little finer, a little more spiritual, but it doesn't matter. You don't need that. That's not the goal. And playing in those areas could be a little dangerous. Could be like
right. Playing
gasoline and cigarette lighters. You know, you kind of don't want to do that. So this goes way beneath that. This experience goes way beneath that to the essential you, which is kind of what we're all looking for. Find out who we are and why we're here. And well, even why we're here doesn't matter when you get to that level.
Right.
Nothing matters when you get to that level. Anyway, that's what the book is about. The book is about the journey of going from a neurotic kid who was a captive Catholic, you know, being accosted by the nuns and telling, you know, if you pick your nose, you're going to go to hell. And, you know, God forbid you should touch yourself. Oh, my God, that's extra fire. And, you know, going from that to I have to figure out what's going on here because I just feel like crap all the time. So I did about 30 things to take care of that. I'm now 78 years old and I feel great. You know, it was really worth it. And this book is about that journey. It's about going through all those things. It doesn't preach anything. It's just simply my experiences of doing these things. I'm not telling anybody they should. I'm just saying you should do something.
Right.
You know, you don't.
No, that's important, right? Because we all have this tether to the earth and to the world around us. Mm-hmm. And we allow those things and those feelings and emotions to affect us. And there are so many people right now, Jimmy, that are feeling that they're in these dark, depressive places that they can't put themselves into. I don't know why. I know I've got a good life, but like you said, there's this oneness and we are connected, interconnected species throughout the entire planet. And there's so much derision and uncertainty and fear that's being bred throughout the world and wars on different fronts and financial instabilities. It shows just how connected we are for people that are maybe skeptical of that.
Yeah,
you know these feelings aren't yours, but you can't define where they came from. It's all around us.
Yeah, you just nailed it. You said, I know I have a great life. There's people who have all the money they've ever needed. Their businesses are successful, and they still feel awful. Because that's not who you are. No matter how good things are, we will get used to it. You get the best mansion in the world. 6 months you're in that house, all you can think about is how difficult it is to clean. The help didn't show up today. You know, all this crazy stuff. You get used to everything. You have to get to this level beneath all of that. And then it doesn't matter. Nice house. Yeah, it's great. But I mean, look at these rock stars, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, the 27 Club. One of my favorite sayings is Bill Graham, the Fillmore East, Fillmore West, said, what do you do when you have everything you've ever wanted, talking about these, the 27 Club, and you're still not getting off? When you get to that point, you're number one, the world loves you, and you still feel the same as before you any of this happened. What do you do? I'll tell you what you do. I wrote a book about it. It's like about 100 different things you can do. Don't sit there and accept this as your reality. Move into something that brings you closer to your essential self and gets you out of your ego and out of all this burdensome stuff that's weighing you down and making you believe that that's you. That is not you. That is just some crap that you've put in your backpack and you're carrying around.
And again, the book, folks, is called California Dreaming and Primal Screaming. Get a copy of the book. We're all feeling this right now, this strange disconnect. We're feeling this feeling as though we're being pulled down into the depths. That isn't who you are. The fame and fortune isn't who you are, but you deserve to have a better life. You deserve to be able to live a life where you're connected, but you're able to live a full and fruitful life. We have one more segment with our guest. We'll come back. We'll continue our discussion right here on the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. We are your home for the best in paranormal talk radio every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. You can find us right here. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, on this journey. And joining me tonight, Jimmy Ryan. He's the author of the book, California Dreaming and Primal Screaming, which does touch on the strange and supernatural elements of Jimmy's life. But it also talks about his journey in trying to transcend the boundaries that we as humans put on ourselves, showing you how you can get beyond. And as you said, you're not preaching. You're just simply sharing the insights like a musician does with music. A lot of music to me is a cult. And people hear the word occult and start thinking dark. But what it is it's magic, right? I mean, we breathe life into something that is channeled through us. We give it voice. We give it sound. And these vibrations reach out and touch the world around us. And they shape things. They can help you time travel, right? How many times do we hear that song, Jimmy, and immediately you're thrown back into the backseat of the car making out with your girlfriend in high school, right? Or you're on the beach with your toes in the sand watching the waves crash.
Yeah.
Because you can hear that music. It brings you back to that. That's a real power. And I know we started off air, you were asking me about music, and I said, I wish I played. I just never had that in me. But man, I do wish I could have that, because I do feel that that is a form of transcendent healing and time travel itself. Do you get that feeling that from being in the music, it really does awaken something in you?
It does. It definitely does. Like I said in the previous segment, you get used to anything. And I've been in kind of the top end of the music business as a support artist more than anything, not a star. I started off as a teenage star. I had some hit records when I was 19, 20, 21. But after that point, I became Carly Simon's guitar player for 21 years and worked with all these people, Elton John and Paul McCartney and, you know, The Doors, all that. You get used to it when it becomes a business and you're not just picking up a guitar for fun and something like that. You get used to that, too. You know, it's just like I said, anything. So when you say the bliss, yeah, that comes. For me, that comes if I'm doing a record and somebody calls me to do a solo. There are those moments when I start playing and I get away from that. Oh, God, are they going to like this? Did I practice enough today? You know, what are they? And then you just hit a couple of notes and you go, ooh, that was good. And you get in that moment and then you get the feedback and they say, wow, that was really good, man. That's the take. We'll do that. That's what happened with You're So Vain. I did the solo on Carly Simon's huge hit, You're So Vain. And when I played it at the end, I said, well, I guess that's okay, right? Do you want to change that? No, that's it. We're done. Yeah. And in that moment, there was just this wonderful feeling inside.
Well, and you hit it. You must have hit the right vibrational notes, because I really thought the song was about me.
Well, if your name is Warren Beatty, then you're right. And it wasn't Mick Jagger.
No.
Actually, it may have been, because she always says, yes, Warren Beatty was one of them.
James Taylor, I thought, was the other one. Those were the two that
she hasn't admitted that. And and James wasn't, Warren Beatty was very egotistical. He was like Mr. Me. James was always quiet, and I never thought of him as being, you know, that egotistical and full of himself. And like, he's just a really quiet, nice guy. Mick Jagger, yeah, he could qualify. And there was a big record company executive. I forget what his name was, but, you know, he was also a contender. But that's the only one she'll actually admit. And, you know, I when she wrote that book, Boys in the Trees, she called me and said, you know, give me some ideas. I've forgotten 90% of what happened in those days. And I said, well, here's one. We were in a dressing room at the Troubadour in L.A. We were about to go on. This was very early in her career. And there's a knock on the dressing room door. And she said, can you get that? I'm just tuning. I said, sure. So I open up the door. And there's this guy in this kind of flammable red, huge collar, stupid shirt and gigantic glasses. And he says, I'd like to see Carly Simon. And I said, well, we're just about to go on. Why don't you, you know, maybe come afterwards? Or so. And he looks at me, he says, I said, I'd like to see Carly Simon. Now, I said, F you. Right. And I just closed the door and says, idiot. And Carly is like white as a sheet with her eyes wide open like this. And I said, what? She says, do you know who you slammed the door on just then? I said, no, who? She says, that was Warren Beatty. I went, oh, my God, no. Oh, let me go get him. She says, no, 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 don't move. And I said, what? Don't you? And she says, no, I don't think anybody's ever done that to him in his life. That was perfect. And I said, so just leave it? She says, yep, leave it. And for me, that was the birth of Years of Vain, because she wrote it right after that. Now, she hasn't admitted it, but she kind of smiled when I told her that. And she was maybe. But that was funny. Certainly a moment that would have qualified for for a song. For sure.
We just have a few minutes left together, Jimmy. What do you hope people can get from the book?
I hope that they get inspiration. I hope it gets them off of their sofa and then they say, I don't have to feel like this, even if it's just a little thing, even if they're just feeling, you know, things are really good, but I got this aching inside and I say the wrong things at the wrong time. And I mean, get off the sofa. There are so many opportunities out there for healing. There is meditation. There's all kinds of therapies. Don't be shy. It doesn't, you know, there's no stigma for doing this anymore. Yeah, in the 40s there was. You're a crazy person if you went to a psychiatrist. No more. No more. Everybody does it. It doesn't have to be expensive. Even a social worker can be helpful. But talk to somebody. Talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about and can help you. You don't have to feel that way. And that's what the whole purpose of this book is, to just inspire people to get off their ass, you know, and do something about their lives. Don't accept unhappiness.
About a minute left here. What was the biggest surprise for you when you sat down to write this book and you completed it?
Oh, that's easy, that I could do it. I was an engineering student in college. I could barely write my name. I didn't do well in English at all, but the whole inspiration for writing, I wrote a previous book that was the other side of it, which is the glamour and the glitter of, it was called The Superstar Chronicles, Tales of Life Among Rock Stars, among rock royalty, I should say. And my son just said, come on, Dad, you got to write about this stuff. You got so many stories. I said, Gavin, I'm not a writer. He said, just try. And I sat down and it started coming out of my fingers. I go, wow, I can actually do this. And I didn't think I could. I was never an English major and I have no training in writing at all, but I just wrote like I speak. I wrote like I think and I wrote like I speak, and it kind of worked. It's both books now have 5 stars on Amazon.
Excellent. Well, congratulations. And folks, pick up a copy of the book. Like I said, don't just read it, rate and review it. What will take you mere seconds to do will mean a lot to our guests, because then people get exposed to the bigger, broader audience. Fame fades and applause dies down, but the real journey, the one that tests your soul, never ends. A huge thank you to Jimmy Ryan for taking us beyond the spotlight tonight into the dark places where the unknown live and watch. The search for answers continues. Stay tuned. There's more Paranormal 360 right after this.